problem with most dresses is they don't have a pocket for a rock. All of my coats have pockets with rocks in them. In the introduction to this stewardship series, the worship committee wrote on this yellow handout that Assembly favorite poet, Mary Oliver, has said, "To pay attention, this is our endless and proper work." They go on to ask, "To whom or to what do we give our attention? Our lives are full of things vying for attention. It's easy to get distracted. How do we focus? How do our focuses or our distractions shape us? How is giving our time different than giving our attention?" In this series, we explore the biblical texts related to the themes of paying attention, receiving attention, and action and contemplation. A central text for this series, they say, is "Fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out." That's the translation from the Message for Romans 2:2. So this morning, I want to look at this Romans passage, the core passage of this series, and to have Mary Oliver, the core poet prophet for this series, who died just recently on January 17th, alongside us. Because indeed, Mary Oliver's life and writings have much to teach us and to share with us about paying attention. "We shake with joy, Mary Oliver. We shake with joy. We shake with grief. What a time they have, these two, housed as they are in the same body." Romans 12:1-2 from the Common English Bible. "So, brothers and sisters, because of God's mercy, I encourage you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice that is holy and pleasing to God. This is your appropriate priestly service. Don't be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds so that you can figure out what God's will is, what is good and pleasing and mature." Growing up, I, probably like you, heard many more sermons on Romans 12:1-2 than I did on Mary Oliver. Mennonites, Anabaptists, we love this verse. We especially like the "don't be conformed to the world" part of this verse. We don't pay much attention, or historically, to the "fix your attention on God" part of this verse. I wanted to see, like, is it just in my imagination that we love the "don't be conformed to the world" part, or, like, do we really love it? So I did a quick Google search. I found out that the Mennonite Education Agency is using this Romans 12:1-2 as a core verse for a new Anabaptist K-12 curriculum that it's writing for all of the Mennonite schools in Canada and the States. Houston Mennonite Church recently chose 12 scriptures to represent their core values. This is one of them. Lombard Mennonite Church uses it as part of their statement of faith. Our conservative brothers and sisters in the Conservative Conference use it all over the place. And in fact, there's a new college called Michael Sattler College in Boston, and this is one of the core components of that college. Sattler College, as in Michael Sattler. In fact, in one of our Anabaptists' earliest statements of faith, I'm sure you're all familiar with the Shorter Catechism of 1690, right? It asks, when you're about to be baptized, "What induces you to unite with the communion of believers and be baptized?" And the response is, "I am impelled by faith to separate myself from the world and its sinful lusts, to submit in obedience to my Lord, Savior, and Redeemer for the salvation of my soul." Anabaptists have used this forever. It has been in our thought and life about discipleship. Following Jesus becomes synonymous with obedience and the ethical demands of the New Testament. Our current confession of faith in a Mennonite perspective, in the opening paragraph for Article 17, which is discipleship in the Christian life, says, "We become conformed to Christ, faithful to the will of God, and separated from the evil in the world." It is the mission of the Anabaptist Mennonite Church to proclaim and practice liberation from the many shackles of the world's institutions and systems. In a book by W. David Buschert, who is not our moderator, a different David Buschert, a book called Exploring Protestant Traditions, An Invitation to Theological Hospitality, he says, quote, "Anabaptists have believed that obedience to the claims of Christ necessarily leads to nonconformity in the world. This is not separation simply for the sake of separation. Christians separate from the world so they might live both as individuals and as an alternative community in accord with God's designs for human beings. This Anabaptist way of being is inherently corporate." Our heritage so values being not being conformed, and it values being transformed in community. We have practiced and taught that we are obedient to each other, that we become different than the world. What are Anabaptist cousins who love this verse? The way that they use it, they see it as the way that it changes their interactions with the world. It changes the way they dress, the ways they use transportation. But what does it mean for us today without the visible markings of our Anabaptist cousins? When I am not easily identifiable by my dress or my language or my hair covering, I would suggest that, along with worship committee, that it is with our attention that we separate. It is with our careful attention to the things around us and to the people around us that we do not conform to the world. And it is in our attention that we are transformed. For instance, we need to pay attention to the world's desire for consumers. The world desires for people to walk blindlessly and thoughtlessly. We need to be aware enough of the lure of the world that we don't get caught in it, that we can be thoughtful about our interactions in it. But that change, that observation has to come from inside of us. Then our outside actions will follow. Fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. So how do we fix our attention on God? If this is the way to change, if this is the way to be formed, and we have this piece that our Anabaptist heritage tells us, it must be done in community. Work in community is the work with bodies. Paying attention can not only be the attention of the eye or the mind. It is the incarnate, embodied work of the community of Christ. It is the attention with your whole self. Look, see, smell, taste, listen, touch, pay attention. Mindful, Mary Oliver. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight. It leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It is what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. Another and particularly notable part of our Anabaptist heritage is that we sometimes become obsessed in our desire to do community right, to have obedience to this higher call and ethic of Jesus. We can and do tear our communities, our church, and our families apart because we want to be right. Because we want to. We need to hold people to account, and this is done in community. But do not turn each other away, and do not turn on yourself because you can't live up to your goals and visions and desires for change. Susan reminded us last week, this is the way to burnout. Gretchen, 2 weeks ago, suggested that Jesus' words to Martha were kind and gentle. Martha, you don't have to do everything. You cannot do all the right things. Not corporately or individually. We are people of compromises. We fall short. And we need to be able to talk about that. We need to try to talk about that without judging ourselves or each other for what we eat and drink, for where we shop or buy gifts or get food for surprise luncheons. We need to show tender attention and care for each other and the world. We need to not become too militant. This allows us to have our imagination expanded, to open ourselves and each other to challenges, to something new, and not feel guilty or less than. We need to learn from Mary the secret of paying attention, of bending low and listening deep. And from Jesus, the secret of receiving, of sitting still, of becoming transformed. When I was in early elementary school, I began to swim competitively. I'd always loved swimming, and my summer swimming lesson teacher suggested to my parents that it might be fun. I began swimming a couple times a week with the swim club in Stratford, about 15 minutes from my small town. I loved the rhythm of breathing in the water, the push of the stroke, the rush of no sound in my ears. I loved that I could move my body through the water without thought and while doing a long, slow swim without really a lot of work. Eventually, I began to do the butterfly. The rhythmic breathing was more intense, and the body, arm, leg action had to be perfected to breathe just right. I loved moving through the water in this powerful way. I swam for 9 years into high school and at different levels of competition. I swam through difficult middle school years, breathing in and out, the daily practices, the reminders to breathe, breathe, breathe. I swam through the tears of my mom coming out, of my parents' divorce, of the confusion in the church and all around me. Breathe, breathe, breathe. With each kick, each stroke, pushing away thought, pushing away judgment, pushing away confusion, pain, loneliness. Breathe, kick, arms. Breathe, kick, arms. I got up early, present in this body that did the work for me. Before, after school, on weekends, people around me just breathing, kicking, floating. I finally stopped when the lure of high school social life was greater than the lure of everyday swimming at an almost national level. If I was really good, it was going to be too much work. I wanted to be with friends. I wanted to play other sports and be in theater. But the water was always there. I trained then to be a lifeguard. I taught lessons. And I continued that through high school and college and graduate school. And still now, some of you I've taught to swim. I love that teaching. Teaching people to breathe. Put your face in, breathe out. Bring your face out, breathe in. Don't panic, breathe. I love teaching people to float and trust the water. It is something that Craig Dykstra, in an article on practical theology, of all things, he reminds us about learning to swim. That he says, somehow or another, you have to come to a specific kind of knowledge, a deeply somatic bodily knowledge. You must come to know the buoyancy of the water. Buoyancy is not something you can teach children or anyone else through a lesson in physics. It's objective, but for the sake of swimming, you have to come to know it personally. And he goes on, so it is with the life of faith. At the very heart of the Christian life, there lies a deep, somatic, profoundly personal, but very real knowledge. It is the knowledge of the buoyancy of God, that we are upheld by God's own everlasting arms. You have to trust and rest into the float, to allow your body to become relaxed rather than stiffen when you enter the water. You have to know it from the inside before it shapes your ability to swim. It is embodied. You must be changed from the inside out. God says to us over and over in every possible way, you are loved, you belong, I am holding you. When we pay attention to the world, when we grasp to the rock, when we float on the water, together we become storytellers of liberation. We see and pay attention to systems of oppression that we participate in, and we become storytellers of justice. We become like Jesus in community, sharing intimacy, sharing a meal, offering hospitality. When we do this together, when we attend to each other in ways that show this love and belonging of God, we come to trust the love and knowledge of God. And then together, we become alive in ways that Craig Dykstra again says, we become better and stronger, more hospitable and gracious, more joyous, generous, and just. In community, we develop what he calls an ecclesial imagination. This is a way of seeing what is there and perhaps bringing it into being. And it is a way of seeing in depth, the capacity to see beneath the surface of a thing and attend to the deep meaning of things. It is this human imagination in community, he says, that is an integrating process and provides the linkages between ourselves and the world, within ourselves, between our bodies and our minds, our emotions and souls and spirits. When our attention is fixed, we see what is real. Matins, Mary Oliver. Now we are awake. Now we come together. Now we are thanking the Lord. And it's easy, for the Lord is everywhere. He is in the water and the air. He is in the very walls. He is around us and in us. He is the floor on which we kneel. We make our songs for him as sweet as we can. And lo, he steps in the song and out of it, having blessed it, having recognized our intention, having awakened us who thought we were awake a second time, having married us to air and water, having lifted us in intensity, having lowered us in beautiful amiability, having given us to each other, the weeds, the dogs, the cities, the boats, dreams, that are the world. We are transformed by attention. God is with us and working with us in our noticing, in our attention to ourselves and each other. And then we see the little things in great beauty and great pain. And we also see the big things, economic and social injustice, racism, xenophobia, patriarchy, homophobia. And in seeing each of these, and the weed, and the dog, and the boat, and the injustice, we are changed. We see our connection to each other. We see our own failings, our lack of love. We become transformed through this attention. We are changed inside, and we become a changed people. And we know that we are held in the buoyancy of God's love, and we want to share it. And my transformation becomes yours, and yours becomes ours, And the community becomes the transformation of the world. And that, my friends, is very good news. Mary Oliver reminds me of these fundamental things that I often need to be reminded of, to look and listen and open myself fearlessly in the moment, in both its darkness and light, and to understand myself as a part of the whole glorious, mysterious, terrible life on earth. She holds nothing back in her praise of body and the embodied community, and in her insistence that we pay attention to it, that we become open to holiness, to God at every turn, that we are changed when we are aware, that we are embodied. Look, listen, taste, touch, smell. You will be changed from the inside out. Pay attention to the world. It is attention with your whole self. May you have wonder. May you revel in it. Mary Oliver, from A Leaf and a Cloud. Bless the fingers, for they are as darting as fire. Bless the little hairs of the body, for they are softer than grass. Bless the hips, for they are cunning beyond all other machinery. Bless the mouth, for it is the describer. Bless the tongue, for it is the maker of words. Bless the eyes, for they are the gifts of angels, for they tell the truth. Bless the shoulders, for they are a strength and a shelter. Bless the thumb, for when working, it has godly grip. Bless the feet, for their knuckles and their modesty. Bless the spine, for it is the whole story. Amen.